Station number 14978, Charles Turnbull, Reel 19.
Mr. Turnbull, reel 19. Did you have stretcher bearers attached to your unit? To your company?
Yes, there was stretcher bearers there. And they had quite a task to do. Not very pleasant for them at times. But there again, they'd been trained to do the job. And it was a job that had to be done.
So if a man was wounded, he'd be picked up by stretcher bearers, presumably, or brought in by his colleagues at the stretcher bearers.
And there again,
where did they go to there?
Well, with having no experience of that, I don't know. I was never in that situation where I had anything to do with anything behind.
But there would be a medical officer attached to the battalion.
That's right, there would be. I had to be taken back to a clearing place where the injury or the wound, whatever it was, would be diagnosed. And like in Blackett's case, where he was brought back to England.
Were men in the unit and officers, were they receiving medals by this time for particular actions?
Well, there were. in particular, one person that I respected was a Sergeant Tommy Myers, and he received a Distinguished Conduct Medal, and in my opinion it was a decoration that was well earned. He received that for close combat work, clearing houses out, house to house warfare.
Was he in your company?
He was. And but this happened later on when he received that. And also I was mentioned in dispatches for Distinguished Conduct.
Where was this? What had you done?
Well, we'll probably I'll have it displayed on the wall. Later on, we'll probably have a look at that.
It was after this?
After this.
What were men's attitudes towards medals? Obviously, some would, probably many would do just the same and get nothing. Was there any kind of envy or jealousy if a man got a medal and someone else didn't?
Can't remember anybody being envious about anything like that. It was just one of them things when somebody had been really picked out for something. But the episode that I've already read, in my opinion, that person earned his medal. And I don't think anybody in his platoon would be envious about it, because they knew that he had led his section in a courageous manner, and without him probably they wouldn't have come through as well as what they would have done without his leadership. And I think the men, although I didn't talk to them about it, because we learned about this later, about this decoration coming through, but they knew that really it had been something that had been well earned and should never be forgotten.
Was there an atmosphere of thinking about medals within a unit? Did
no,
people
would,
think about winning medals?
I would think nobody thought in that direction at all. All that anybody was pleased about was when he came through anything and he survived not about winning medals. I don't think anybody ever set himself out to win a medal. It was just something that he was either the type when he could adapt to a situation and get on with the job. And it just must be a case of whereby the army authorities thought that recognition had to be given to somebody. And the people who, at that time, the company commander or the platoon commander would make the recommendation, and the allocation would be taken up, and it had to be allocated to somebody.
So this is a situation where a unit was allocated a medal or some number of medals that had to be then selected in effect, but not by any one particular individual had won that medal. The unit in effect had got this allocation and then they had to be given out.
Well, I can't speak about that with authority on how, whether an allocation was made or not. But what I'm saying is that really, that person that I've mentioned in particular, in my opinion, he'd earned his medal. And whether it was an allocation or not, he should have been nominated for one.
Which he probably was, by name.
He would be. He'd be nominated by name for what he'd done.
You'd never recall in your experience anyone getting a medal and wondering how they got it. In other words, other people have done more.
Well, I'll say in my own opinion, to receive a mention in dispatches, when I learned about it, I wondered why. But there again, it must have been a case of the nomination would come from somebody, and he must have thought that what had taken place, I was the right person to receive one, that your name wouldn't be just given ad lib, that somebody had to have it. It must have been a recommendation from somebody within the battalion.
Yeah, I think mentioning dispatches was someone who had been viewed to do doing these things and possibly even over a period of time.
Well, that was my opinion when I learned about it. And all I can say is that really, at the time, I can't say that it meant a great deal to me at that time, but I can remember that my family being very pleased, that really I must have controlled myself in a proper manner and tried to be, if I've already said that over the period of my service, tried to be something of a right type of a leader, if one could say that.
You said that in the August time the brigade was informed it was going to be broken up and given men transferred to the units. How did you feel?
At that time everybody felt rather terrible. That really they didn't want to leave the DLI formation, because being North Country, that feeling about the Durham Light Infantry was very prevalent in all the North Country men who were in the regiment. And really, after suffering the hard times that had been encountered, the feeling was that the men wanted to stay together and probably felt that really, if we've got to go on, why can't we go on as a brigade? And instead of reinforcing somebody else, why can't we be reinforced and carry on the tradition of the DLI formations? But the powers that be had decided that it had to be that way, And this eventually was accepted, that it was a decision that had been made, and nobody could do anything about it, that it would have to be adhered to.
Did they explain to you why there had to be a breakup?
Just that, really, what had taken place, and the brigade now was so depleted, and probably with the with the higher ranks and right up to divisional level, probably they thought that probably at divisional level probably new formations were necessary, and there'd probably been a new mode of thought about what would likely to happen in the future. Probably they'd gained more and more experience under the type of actions that had taken place, and whether they had new ideas on how to combat this, I don't know.
You said that this news had come through in the August of 1944. When did you actually move, and where did you move to?
Well, what happened was, really what I can say is now, that really when the battalions were split up, I think at that time the 10th and the Tyneside Scottish were the battalions who had the lowest number. I think the 11th were in a little bit better fettle than what we were. And everybody wondered why there would be transfer to. Well, fortunately, I was transferred to another DLI formation, which was the 8th Battalion. And a lot of the others were transferred to other regiments, which I think probably wouldn't go down too well, that most people would rather have gone to a DLI battalion, but naturally they were only able to accept so many, and that when that number was reached, well, the others had to be transferred to another unit. But anyhow, I counted myself fortunate that I was going to a DLI regiment again.
When did you join the 8th?
Well, I think that must have been about the back end of August or the beginning of September.
Did you keep your rank?
Still kept my rank, yes.
And which company did you go to there?
D Company, I think.
Do you remember the commanding officer?
There again, I can't.
How were you received? The 8th Battalion already had a long experience of warfare through the desert. Mm.
Well, there was no malice anywhere that had gone by the board now. There again, the people who'd served in the desert, I can't really say, but how many of them was there left now? Reinforcements had gone in, so it was a changing formation now. And of course, you've got to remember as well that we're now fighting under different conditions altogether, what happened in the desert. That now, really, those days had more or less gone. It was different battle conditions altogether to what had happened in the desert. And right from D-Day onwards, all the people who had landed there, well, should we say that they had really a fair amount of experience now? That really what had happened years ago, well, the newcomers now had really a fair amount of battle experience, if one could say that.
D Company, where were the men, or where had the men come from in D Company? Were they Durham men?
Mostly But there were mixed, all mind. But the reaction was that they were pleased to be in the day alive. I mean, the history of the Durham Light Infantry had gone on before them, and they knew that they were a good regiment.
Who was commanding the battalion?
I think it was Saunders that was still there.
He'd come over from...
I think so. If I remember rightly.
What condition was the battalion in when you got to it? Because it had come through a pretty tough time since D-Day.
Well, it had come through a tough time. But there again, with the new reinforcements coming in all the time, it was quite mixed.
The Germans, of course, now were retreating.
That's right.
Falaise had come and gone. What happened to you after you
joined?
Well,
the advance was quite quick. We were now a lorried battalion. And also I can remember quite a lot of German vehicles had been captured. Cars, and there again the men were quite delighted to be, should we say, now in a bit of a frivolous mood, that they were rolling along, advancing quite quickly. But I can remember this situation didn't last very long, because one can imagine it really. We weren't travelling along in, could we say, an ordered formation. And, of course, this was soon stopped. That really, all the captured German vehicles had to be left behind. And we assumed the formation of a, could we say, the correct military formation, which, whilst that little bit of a happy atmosphere was left behind, I would say, in my opinion, it was necessary. That if that had been allowed to continue, probably, could we say that probably a little bit of discipline might have gone if men had been allowed to carry on in that fashion.
Did you bump into pockets of resistance during the advance, do you recall?
Very little at that time. That really the advance up to Brussels was quite easy.
What was happening as you went through French towns and villages?
Well, now the reception now was absolutely marvellous. That when we got into Brussels, well, people were throwing flowers and fruit, and was absolutely hilarious, really. One hadn't experienced anything like this, but there was a very happy situation existing at their liberation, which one could understand it from their point of view. They'd been under the occupation of the Germans, and they were glad to be rid.
Had you come in contact with any of the French resistance movement?
No experience at all of that.
And seeing none of the French civilians who had been too friendly with the Germans being dealt with?
No experience at all of that. No, it was a case of, right, getting on with the job of what had to be done. And talking about the reception in Brussels was that when we eventually stopped there, eventually the information was that we were going to be there for quite a period of time, actually about 2 weeks was mentioned, which the men were really looking forward to, a respite and a bit of recreation and a bit of freedom from the atmosphere that had to endure. And I can always remember that really one lady approached me and she said, I can always remember her words, "Do you think it's possible that I'll be able to see my son again?" So naturally I said, "Well, where is your son?" And she said that really her son, when the Germans had occupied Brussels, he had made his way to the French coast and managed to get across to England, and now he was flying with the RAF. So naturally I said, "Well, now that Brussels has been reoccupied, it may be possible for him to come back eventually." So after the conversation, she said, "Would it be possible that you and a friend could visit us tonight?" This was the afternoon period. So I said, "Oh, well, that may be possible. So if we could have the address, we'll come down." So what I found out that was, when we did find out where the place were, they were living in a chateau on the outskirts of Brussels. And when one approached the iron gates, and the chap who went down with me was a colour sergeant, and his name was Bill Parkin. And there again we wondered, well, how have these people been allowed to still live here? But what we found out was that really when we went down, it had been occupied by German officers, and the family who had been pre-war the biggest bankers in Belgium, and they called the family De Verrien. And they said that really the Germans of officers' rank did still respect anybody who'd been in the Belgium army of the equivalent rank, and they still had been allowed to live in the upstairs apartment. So that was how they were still there. But anyhow, we had a marvellous reception from them, and there were wonderful tours. Of course, as they said, they knew how the British people would have treated their son when we had got to England. But anyhow, what happened was, we went back on the second day, and then we received the news that the Germans had broken through again, and instead of staying for a couple of weeks as we had been initially told, we were given the order that we would have to move further on and eventually attempt to combat the German breakthrough again.
Was this common experience in the battalion, that the Belgian people in Brussels took soldiers into their homes?
Yes, they were. They were absolutely marvellous. I think, as one can imagine it, they did really hard-hated the German occupation.
Did they tell you what it had been like?
Well, it hadn't been very pleasant. I think the food situation, etc., hadn't been good. And of course, they had to comply with the orders that had been given.
What date was it that you were there?
Well, that would be in the early part of September.
So you said you were moved out more quickly than you would than you thought. Where did you go to then?
I think after that we did advance up to the Albert Canal, where crossings had to be made, and the 8th Battalion were involved in that. So what happened was, when we got to the Albert Canal, well, crossings had to be made of the canal, and there again the company that I was in was the reserve company, and the two companies that went before, the crossings were made by small boats, and I can always remember the Royal Engineers had to attempt to erect a bridge over the canal, and quite fairly heavy casualties were sustained on the crossing, and the attempt to gain a foothold on the other side, which was accomplished. So there again, we were fortunate here on being the reserve company. And when our turn came to go across, the casualties were only slight.
Had you crossed yourselves by boats, or did you get over this bridge they were building?
We went across by boats initially, but after that, the bridge was made where they were able to bring supplies over without a great deal of difficulty.
So you must have been under pretty heavy fire.
the two leading companies were, but there again, they'd gained a foothold over, but it hadn't been an easy task.
What are your memories of the rest of that battle? Because this is Geel, isn't it? Is it not?
Well, after that, the town of Geel had to be cleared, and this was the task of the 8th Battalion, and it was quite a heavy do. And this was where Sergeant Myers received his decoration. And also, one of the things that remains in my mind is that a friend of mine who was in battalion headquarters, a shell dropped, and his name was Nickel, Bert Nickel. And when it dropped, and I wasn't a great long way away, and when he looked down, you can imagine his shock, and he found that his hand had been blown off. And I can remember hearing the news what had happened to Bert Nickel. And him and I had played football together in our days around Durham, and I felt quite upset that someone who I was personally associated with from our young days had sustained this injury. But fortunately, Bert was able to eventually come out of the army all right at the end of the war. And whilst it wasn't a very pleasant injury, he was able to overcome that quite well and carry on the job that he'd had in civilian life, which was, when he joined up, a commercial traveller for Joshua Wilson's in Sunderland.